Archers.
I beg pardon, sire. Won't we hit our own troops?
Yes. But we'll hit theirs as well. We have reserves.
One night, my partner's out sick, as is me. And a call comes in, and it's the usual crap. Broke her nose in the shower kind of thing. So I cuff him, put him in the car, and away we go. Only that night, we're driving into town, and this sideways asshole is in my back seat humming Danny Boy. And it just rubbed me wrong. So instead of left, I go right out into nowhere. And I kneel him down, and I put my revolver in his mouth. And I told him, this is it. This is how it ends. And he's crying, going to the bathroom all over himself, swearing to God he's going to leave her alone, screaming as much as you can with a gun in your mouth. And I told him to be quiet. But I need to think about what I was going to do here. And of course he got quiet. Goes still. And real quiet. Like a dog waiting for dinner scraps. And we just stood there for a while. Me acting like I'm thinking things over. And Prince Charming kneeling in the dirt with shit in his pants. And after a few minutes, I took the gun out of his mouth. And I say, so help me, if you ever touch her again, I will such and such and such and such and blah, 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 blah.
Just a warning.
Oh, of course. Just trying to do the right thing. But 2 weeks later, he killed her. Of course. Caved her head in with the base of a wearing blender. We got there, there was so much blood you could taste the metal. The moral of the story is, I chose a half measure when I should have gone all the way. I'll never make that mistake again. No more half measures, Walter.
Yep, no more half measures. Hey, it's Terrible Tommy here in the bunker. How you doing? It is, this is the September the 21st, 2017. And we're here, and you're there, and we're ready to go. Let's see if we can dig up some real wild stuff today. Okay? Are you with me? Don't forget, we're at V.O. Box 1687, San Jacinto, California, 92583. You got that? Okay. Oh, yeah, try to remember to send your email and your information you send to me to the TMMETZGER, T.M. Metzger 1. @gmail.com instead of the Yahoo address. I check them both, but it's easier on the Gmail. Okay? How do you like those third world building contractors down in Mexico? Not only are they unable to really build the right kind of building, but most of the, I don't think they use any rebar in the whole damn thing. And the corruption's so bad down there. But don't laugh and don't get excited, because that same kind of corruption and crummy building action is coming up here. Because as more and more of the population become brown, you're going to see them in the more and more in the building trades, and gradually the qualifications for buildings and checking them out is going to fall. And so when an earthquake comes, our buildings will fall like in Mexico. How about that? You think about all those white racists back in the old days that included all these islands in with the United States. Not as states necessarily, but areas of interest, because they wanted to get all the goodies out. But at the same time, they're laying us open for invasion by these people. Now, what they're going to do now is say, oh, we got that whole liberal bunch, and the Christians and all of them, they're going to say, we got to bring these Puerto Ricans in here, because, they don't have anything. They won't have power for their television sets for months. We got to do something. You wouldn't let them just dig out on their own desserts, would you? You wouldn't do that, because you're a good Christian white person. Okay, you watch it. It'll be like the Cuban invasion, 20, 30 years ago? Maybe longer. Do you remember that? The Mariel boat flotation? When Castro, smart, he opened up his prisons and let them float over here to the United States. Puerto Rico, all these places like that we never should have connected to in the first place. Now they're white man's burden again. How about that? There is a sizable percentage of white Puerto Ricans, and I would say that would be fine to bring those people in. But the rest, go fish. Old Trumpy is bragging about sending more and more business, guiding it into the Ukraine. This is obvious as a threat to the Russians, to cause problems with the Russians. And he knows what he's doing. He's working for the capitalistas. And the more we put into that, into the Ukraine, it's going to build more trouble between Ukraine and Russia, which is exactly what they want. The military-industrial complex, that is. I heard on late radio last night that a woman over in New Mexico was working in a Kmart. Not a Kmart, but a Circle K. And evidently some Negro came in and stuck a gun in her face, and she pulled a gun out and killed his ass. Now, the cops and the powers that be are not charging her with anything, of course. But to show you the contempt that the corporations have for the working person, and they do hate you. They don't care what happens to you, and they don't want you to have a gun to protect yourself when you're in a position, even when you're handling a lot of cash. They fired her. Now, that's exactly the symbol that you should understand. Those big corporations don't care one fuck for anybody that works for them. And the thing is, they never get punished for it either. Hopefully someday they get punished. Hope to be around when that happens. So make sure that you don't become a customer of Circle K. I used to know the guy that started that corporation. He lived in Fallbrook, California for several years, and then he moved out. You got to understand, if you're a working person, the corporations are your worst enemy, or one of your worst enemies. Don't ever forget it. A large share of your problems and the country's problems and the white people's problems and all people's problems come down to the corporate structure. Oh yeah, remember Nikki Haley, this Indian broad that's the ambassador of the UN? Well, when Trump was speaking, I always look and watch people that are around on the periphery and see their facial expressions and so forth, their body language. Nikki Haley sat there the whole time with a bitter look on her face and her arms totally crossed in front. Body language, crossed arms, means I'm rejecting everything you're saying. Yeah. Good old Nikki Haley. Trump would do well to get rid of her because she's going to be a thorn in his side from here on. Did you ever wonder about the Jews and their infatuation or their sensitivity to the number six? Well, let's see here. Robert Friends, who I knew, I think he's still alive someplace. He says, I'm no researcher when it comes to theories, since I prefer my own to those of others. I rarely read fiction, since I can dream up tales far more wild than those of Space Warp Spielberg. Therefore, it's down conjecture lane that I must meander when I pursue a thought planted by Dr. Revelo P. Oliver in a recent issue of Liberty Bell. Why 6 million? Dr. Oliver asks when he discusses the number of imaginary dead Jews moan about. Insturation, and that was a good magazine too for a long time, an arid vocabulary exercising periodical, often comments, there's that number again, referring to the cardinal number 6 or the mathematician's positive integer 6. There is absolutely no doubt that bizarre brains have attached 6 to many religious beliefs or cooked up religious beliefs from the number 6. From the book of Genesis on, the Bible is loaded with sixes, covering everything from days, years, numbers of sons, count of oxen, numbers of pots, years of field may be used, and so on. The book of 2 Samuel 21:20 states that there was yet a great battle in Gath, where was a man of great stature that had on every hand 6 fingers and on every foot 6 toes. Imagine that, no middle finger. He wouldn't have been able to give the Clinton salute. The Jews are purified in a 6-pot ritual. St. John 2:6, it goes on, from 6 being used in hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands to 600,000s in Exodus 12:37 and Numbers 1:27. Interestingly enough, I could find no references to 6 million. What a shame. For such a massive work as the Bible is, there's no reason that 6 should pop up more frequently than any of the other 9 digits, and it doesn't. Any novel, technical manual, or piece of historical writing will usually show a rather random distribution of the single-digit counting numbers if the numbers are representative in the real world. A 6 will randomly appear in one selection out of 10%, when the set is limited to unique single digits. If the set contains the counting numbers of 1 to 99, the probability of picking a number which has a 6 in it rises to 19%. From 1 to 999, about 27%. There are 2,811, 354 numbers less than 6 million, which contains at least 1 6. It is curious that this number, 2,811, 354, has 6 prime factors, prime numbers, which divide it. That is 2, 3, 7, 13, 19, and 271. A prime number is a number which has no divisors, factors, except itself, and 1. 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 11, and 13 are examples of prime numbers. A quick glance at the Bible reveals that 6 played a lesser role than several of the other numbers. While 6 appears 195 times, the 3 shows up 814 times, the 4 shows up 542 times, the 5 302 times, the 7 427, the 8 79, and the 9 49, and 10 351 times. The significance of a 3 becomes apparent from the triads, such as the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, and the man, the woman, and the child, tracheotomy, is part of our reasoning system, greater than, less than, equal to, negative numbers, positive numbers, and zero, three primary numbers, 3 points determine a plane, red, green, and amber, caution lights. The minimum number of sides on a polygon may have is 3, and so on. Triangles have fascinated men for centuries, particularly triangles containing the right angle 90 degrees. The most primitive of right triangles with the whole number of sides is 3, 4, and 5. Now the square of 3 added to the square of 4 equals the square of 5. The square of 5 is the number of inches in the Egyptian sacred cubit. Also 3 plus 4 plus 5 equal 12, the zodiac number from Eat, Drink, and Be Merry to jokes from sets of 3 lines. There has always been an immense human involvement with the number 3. 3 strikes and you're out. If a copy of an equilangular triangle is rotated 60 degrees and positioned on the original, we have the 6-pointed star which obscenely decorates much of the world. God capitalized the 6 when he made man on the 6th day, Genesis 1:24-31. On the 5th day, all other life was created, including presumably we Goyim. It all started when God made the Jew a 6-day wonder. But why did God pick 6? If 6 is a magical number for God's children, then we should also remember that God created insects with 6 legs. A bee commune contains a little 6-sided cells, and there are 6 petals on the flower of the stinkweed. 6 is what the math buffs call a perfect number. When we add up its divisors, 1, 2, and 3, the total is 6. This is also true of 28, which is 1, 2, 4, 7, 14, and 496, which is 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 31, 32, 124, 248. There is an infinite count of perfect numbers, but this is only mathematically poopla. 6 is only a scribble and a noise which is passed between beings who have need to count. We have to get this basic in order to avoid all that magic number nonsense which paralyzes many brains. That ludicrous 6 million guessing number has 7 digits, days of the week, where a 0 represents the number of days the gas was shut off. A 6 was 6 zeros. On the 7th day, digit 6, the gas was turned on. Chemical element number 6 is carbon, which results from burning something in an oven. One could romp with this all day, but the numbers are still scribbles, and the noises of which we attach some meaning, practical magic, and spook-like. In the days before Joe's six-pack, wow, there's a number again, could swill himself into oblivion. It was apparent to the counters that several critters had 2 legs, some 4, others 6, some with none, and many with dozens. It was hard to make a case for any number when it came to leg counting. The number 5 appears as a count of fingers and toes, although some critters had 1 toe, others 3, and so forth. This also was not very inspiring, but led to the use of the 10-count system, since this was as far as a normal person could go with his fingers. In this regard, most people haven't kept pace with the times. They still can't count beyond their fingers. 5 occurs as an interesting number. During latter history, there are only 5 regular polyhedrons. A polyhedron is a 3-dimensional solid where all of the faces are regular and the congruent polygons. A regular polygon has sides of equal measure with equal measure included angles. A square is a 4-sided regular polygon. 6, Wahoo squares will form the sides of a hexagonatron, a cube. The other four regular polyhedrons are tetrachian. Four faces, the octahedron, eight faces, and the... Come on, man, this is getting too much, brother. I'm sure it's a great article, but I think I'm losing my listeners here, so I'm going to switch to something else and maybe go back to this later. I didn't realize Robert Friends was such a mathematician. My father was a very well-known mathematician. He established, along with others, the duodecimal idea and pushed it for international. Instead of having base 10, he wanted to have base 12. And he spent his life working on that. Not only that, but I remember visiting the Naval Weapons Station in Seal Beach to see him, and he was working on a project for the Navy called the air gun. I never got the principal or any more information. It was probably top secret anyhow, but he was working on that. And he had just come from Caltech, where he worked with the scientists there. Let me see here. Well, let's see. I'm sure I can find something else here. Just a minute. I'm going to pause you. Stay right there. Well, here we go. Verbal ammunition for white nationalists. Now, I consider myself more of a white racial separatist than a white nationalist. The anti-Jews spew antidote to the communist planet of the apes. By Katrina Vanderpool. This paper is dedicated to the task of dismantling of the most widely used Jewish establishment argument against white racialists. The technique involved here is actually more important than the content of the arguments presented. Since the public possesses such a short attention span, we will jolt them with this NS-sounding bites. Specific examples will be given to demonstrate the two-step verbal blitzkrieg. It should be clearly evident to all white nationalists that there is a string of cliché labels used against us by the Jewish press and their collaborators. These word weapons have been far too effective in paralyzing racialists and frightening away our sympathizers. Our task is to be very quickly neutralize these emotional charged terms and have them boomeranged back on the opposition. We must never allow ourselves to be left on the defensive. The Jewish media has trained the sheep-like public to respond to words such as racism or discrimination in a predetermined way. This conditioned response was created in much the same way that Pavlov trained his dog. However, this conditioned response can be weakened or even broken by refusing to play by their rules. I like that. Remember that the Jews expect everyone to play with their carefully controlled parameters, such as the phony Democrat Party versus the GOP political spectrum. So the first task is to blow down their borders and gore their sacred cow immediately. Do this quickly, and then move on to where you want to position yourself before you launch your offensive. The second step is take control of the argument and to aggressively attack their ideas. Quickly put them on the defensive. The key to success is for the nationalists to take the offensive against our enemies and to drive them off the field. Use facts, observable truths, and connect the dots for people so that they may see the Jewish pattern of control. Submitted for your approval are most of the shop-worn labels that are used against us by the media. Brain-dead TV tabloid audiences are especially fond of regurgitating them. The most common used cliche terms are racist, hate group, anti-Semitic, fascist, or Nazi, ignorance, equality of man, white supremacist, and so on. I intend to show how to take these terms and ram them down the Jewish attack dog's throat. Number one, racism. How many times have you witnessed a thoughtful, objective white person squirm uncomfortably when denounced as a racist? The accuser assumes this pious mantle of righteousness while denouncing the evils of racism. Serious, objective discussion is often terminated at this point. The accused white person will then unconvincingly spend most of his or her time trying to evade this onerous label instead of delving into the serious issues at hand. The accuser will appear to stand triumphantly on the alleged high moral ground. This scenario is played out daily with always the same outcome, the reason being that the unsuspecting white did not contest the basic rules of morality imposed upon him. The premise that racism is bad went unchallenged. Now let's replay this scenario using our rules. The first thing to do is to knock the opponent off their high moral pedestal. This will invariably disorient your foe. They're often left stammering and confused since you have deviated from their script. In other words, you have pulled the rug out from under them. The second step involves dragging the hapless foe through the mud. Here is my response to being labeled a racist. Racism and xenophobia are nothing more than survival tools of a species. Every healthy species or subspecies must protect the gene pool at all costs. By preventing me and my race from expressing healthy racist tendencies is tantamount to advocating genocide against my people. Notice that not only did I quickly demonstrate that racism is good, but I have also soiled my accuser with the charge of genocide. This is the two-step Jew-spew antidote program in a nutshell. After this is delivered, you're free to pursue many of your own related NS arguments against race mixing, i.e. the LA nightmare or Brazil's out-of-control mulatto street population and so on. Number two, hate group. Did you ever notice that all white nationalist groups are always labeled as hate groups by the media? Of course, the Jewish-created ANC African National Congress is never designated as a hate group. The ANC has viciously murdered more victims than all the white nationalist groups combined. We all know about the double standard. This is probably one of the most subjective labels used by the Jews. The accuser obviously hates you, but somehow thinks the label doesn't fit to himself. The bottom line is that there is no objective definition of what a hate group even is. When accused of being a hate group or being a hater, I would reply as follows. You're right. I am a group that hates the moral hypocrisy that you subscribe to. We hate your system's crime, degeneracy, industrial and chemical pollution, and our usury banking system. What of it? Your group hates responsibility, expressions of love for the white race, beauty, intelligence, and of course the natural law. The real question is, are you in a white racialist hate group or a Jew spew collaborator hate group? This is a case of playing off the label and making sure that it sticks to the Jews as much as it does to us. The key is not to even attempt to deny it, simply show that the label itself is beyond useless and completely absurd. Number three, anti-Semitism. Most nationalist and populist oriented people will own up to being anti-Zionist but not anti-Semitic. I propose yet another twist to this major fear-inducing label. Are you anti-Semitic? No, I have nothing against Arabs per se. However, I am anti-Jewish, as are most Arabs. I simply recognize that Judaism is a destructive force used against all productive, healthy nations. By the way, Jews are obviously anti-Aryan since they are never labeled as such. This method shows that this label is imprecise, and the other Semites feel as strongly as we do about the Jews. This also shows the notorious double standard which operates in favor of the Jews. 4. Fascist or Nazi. These terms are supposed to be used as pejoratives. However, I enthusiastically embrace both words when applied to myself. This is, of course, not what the opposition is expecting. I am a fascist, or more precisely, a National Socialist. National Socialists believe in loyalty based on the genetic bonds of race, not loyalty to the dollar that the Jew capitalism advocates. We recognize the fact that you can only have a better society by populating it with better people. This is in direct contrast to the lowest common denominator type people that democracy forever subsidizes. This statement illustrates the pride and the courage that we feel towards our cause. Never compromise our NS principles or try to hide them. Always force the opposition to confront reality. The above gambit can easily lead to a major airing of democracy's dirty laundry. Number 5, ignorance. This is the label that is not used as frequently as it once was. However, it is occasionally brought up by moronic blacks, so let's deal with it. The argument starts out by some claim that racism is caused by ignorance. My reply would be that ignorance is essentially caused by a lack of knowledge, since I can easily cite both scientific facts and quote many authoritative sources. I would like you to do the same. For instance, what study have you seen that contradicts Dr. Vince black versus white brain morphology study or Dr. Shockley's findings on intelligence differences between blacks and whites? This will probably silence your foe immediately. However, if he is dull-witted enough to continue, then unbridled sarcasm can be used to finish him off. For instance, persist in making him divulge his sources. Ask him what is his primary source of information, TV sitcoms or MTV videos. The ignorance label can quickly be used to boomerang back on your foe, as shown above. If your foe is ill-informed, he will be able to look stupid as well as ignorant. At any rate, it will be necessary to demonstrate that ignorant label does not apply to you. Number 6, equality. We hear that we are all equal, ad nauseum, especially from brainwashed whites. Jews spew religions, of course, really promulgate this idea. In fact, the doctrine of equality is a very powerful superstition in our society. However, I will simply use reality to evaporate this mirage. The statement, we are all equal, means that each of us is completely interchangeable with one another. There would be no such thing as talent or differences in intelligence. This, of course, flies in the face of all observable facts. Since this position is untenable, they will then assert that all races are equal. My reply is that we were all given dirt, rocks, trees. Now, what did each race do with its set of dirt, rocks, and trees? The Negroes never came up with a written language, the wheel, or anything resembling a true civilization. If natural resources are a key factor in human development, then why doesn't resource-rich Angola giving foreign aid to resource-poor Iceland? Now, there's a little misprint here. I'm open and honest about mine, while you are disingenuous and hypocritical about yours. Once again, I've demonstrated that these labels apply to everyone. They are purely diversionary. Remember that whatever benefits the white race is good, while anything that hinders it is evil. We follow our ethical code, not theirs. 9. White superiority versus human race. obviously some of these labels have overlapping meanings. These poorly defined terms often creep up in racial discussion. My recommendation is to destroy all credibility in the notion of the nobility of the human race before anything else. In contrast to white supremacists, human supremacists believe that all Homo sapiens are completely above the laws of nature that govern all other life on Earth. White supremacists do not recognize the significance of the so-called human race, which is nothing more than an arbitrary grouping of talking bipeds. We simply acknowledge that the majority of humanity could be easily classified as worthless, resource-depleting food tubes. This is a very harsh rebuke to anyone that believes that human life is somehow more precious than other species. The truth of the matter is that most of us prefer the company of dogs and cats to that of blacks and Jews. Do people actually enjoy the crush of humanity, or do they try to avoid the crowds? Number 10, open-mindedness versus closed-mindedness. As racialists, we are often chastised by race mixers to open our minds. What they really mean is for us to turn off our minds so that they can brainwash and manipulate us. I keep an open mind on an issue until I have enough information from all opposing viewpoints to make a decision pro or con. At that point, the issue is closed unless further data presents itself. With regards to miscegenation, my mind is now closed because the preponderance of evidence is against it. While there is nothing, I am constantly amazed how this equality argument goes unchallenged. In many ways, it is the easiest to debunk. It should not only just be disapproved of by cogent argument, but should actually be heavily ridiculed. There are many pathways that can be pursued to attack the equality argument. 7. Discrimination. Remember when a well-bred person was said to have discriminating taste and that this was meant as a compliment? Now, of course, we are supposed to have the powers of observation and judgment of amoebas. After all, the intelligent discernment of racial differences might hurt someone's feelings. Therefore, the Jews and the Judeo-Christians want us to abandon all reason and intelligence and embrace their idiotic belief in equality. Discrimination is applying one's acquired knowledge to everybody, everyday decision-making. For instance, choosing gold over lead or celery instead of hemlock are important decisions that would be impossible without the power of discrimination. In much the same way, I prefer the company of intelligent, creative whites to graffiti-scrawling criminal blacks. It's called reality. Look into it. The idea that discrimination is bad is another ludicrous notion that can bring grievous harm to anyone when practicing non-discrimination. This is another very soft target, so don't hesitate to sink it. Prejudice or bigotry. These terms get hurled at us by inferiors who want something for nothing. Giving them a chance means giving them unfair advantage over whites. This is another big con to separate productive white people from their hard-earned money. Aren't you prejudiced against races? Didn't you come here with a bigoted notion of what a Nazi is? Why is it considered bad to practice prejudice and bigotry in favor of the white race? While your use of prejudice and bigotry in favor of dysgenic bottom feeders is considered good, this difference between your brand of prejudice and being substantial to support it. Miscegenation practiced in both ancient Aryan India and the Spanish colony of Mexico destroyed their people's genetic ability to maintain or advance civilization. The white people in these lands degenerated into a mongrel overbreeding hordes of today. Are you open-minded enough to consider these conclusions? If not, then show me a nation where race mixing actually improved its status. This is a case where I lucidly explain why I do not reject the label. However, the establishment dupes once again find themselves hopelessly ensnared in a trap that was set for me. Within this argument, I also destroyed all the credibility in assassination. 11. Myths of America. Several pernicious myths constantly promoted by the establishment to keep patriots in line. Once again, they are trying to ensure unquestioned loyalty to the flag, the Constitution, and democracy. Let's knock them down like a row of dominoes. A. The flag. Americans are supposed to get all misty over the hoisting of Old Glory. However, the history of the flag during this century is nothing to marvel at. The charge of being anti-American or disloyal to the flag, I must reply that my loyalty is unquestionably to my race. I cannot pledge allegiance to a red, white, and blue rag that represents genocide of the white race, as it mostly certainly does now. B. The Constitution. Gee, don't we just love those constitutional Republicans whining about how unconstitutional our government is? One would think that this magical document is good under class. Once again, I must reaffirm my loyalty to my race and not to a piece of paper. Unscrupulous politicians that have sold out their race and nation are not going to have pains of conscience over violating any constitution. The revered system of checks and balances is nothing more than foxes guarding the hen house. C. Democracy. We are constantly told that this, imperfect as democracy is, that it's still the best system possible. Like Plato, who rated democracy as the second to the worst type of government, I find it hard to believe that wallowing in ever new lows of depravity is the best we can do. Democracy is a bloated sacred cow that needs to be put out to pasture permanently. Democracy promotes ideas such as every human carcass has inalienable rights, that the Jews are above all criticism, that the white race must foot the bill for every miscreant on the planet. Democracy creates hopeless pyramid schemes to find its social programs, and it's administered by corrupt, irresponsible bureaucracies. Democracy is nothing but a sham run by an internationalist slave master that is forcing all of us to work ourselves to death on its global plantation. Democracy proves the Orwellian slogan that freedom is slavery. D. Nation of Immigrants. This lame excuse is used to hold open the immigration floodgate to the third world. Do we really need such cultural contributions as disease, poverty, crime from these third world rock kickers? America was built by white immigrants in a span of about 100 years. This is something that the New World Aborigines failed to do in over 10,000 years of their occupation of the same land. Early white immigrants had to risk both life and limb in order to build this nation from scratch. In contrast to the hardships faced by the white immigrants, the non-white immigrants of today enjoy free education, free medical care, and of course, welfare. Note the stunning contrast drawn between yesterday's white immigrants and today's mud-race freeloaders. Once again, I have allowed reality to overtake the myth. E. The melting pot and multiculturalism. These ideas are fine when they are applied to various white ethnic groups, but it is a disaster when other races are introduced. The following allegory demonstrates the folly of race mixing that these notions promote. Imagine if a chef made a stew by randomly tossing in such incongruous ingredients as strawberries, cottage cheese, lemons, bagels, chocolate, and liver. The results would be a pail of slop fit only to be eaten by the pigs. The government uses this same haphazard approach in its current integration policies. the notion of the melting pot and multiculturalism will inevitably degenerate Americans into an unsavory race of nondescript mongrel. Obviously, I'm engaging in a scorched earth policy with regards to the American myth. White European blood is the factor most responsible for past success and prosperity of America, as Western white civilization is rapidly being mongrelized and looted by the Judeo-Christian axis. We must fight to keep our blood pure and our vision clear. 12. Christianity. The Jews adopted a ruthless racist religion for themselves while palming off a sickly defeatist sucker religion on all of us Gentiles. Christianity is an imbecilic fraud at best and a Jewish weapon of the white genocide at worst. In the past, Christianity rotted out and destroyed the great Roman Empire. Presently, it is casting white civilization down into a new dark age. Most of us think that only immature children believe in Santa Claus, who rewards good girls and boys, yet straight-faced adults claim that they will be similarly rewarded by another unsubstantiated super being in the afterlife. Christianity is just more Jew spew that dupes its believers into betraying their own race and destroying their own civilization for the sake of gaining a personal cushy spot in heaven. What kind of God is going to reward such a despicable lot of traitors with eternal life? Even when racialists try to make over the Bible into their own image, they still are left with suicidal doctrines such as love your enemies, the Jews, the last shall be first. Morons and degenerates. The blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek, praising vile criminals and cowards, and think not of tomorrow, or tomorrow will take care of itself, instructing us never to plan ahead or set goals. Christianity is mental AIDS, which becomes more virulent with each passing year. Christianity is the bastion of race treason and race mixing. Racialists can no longer afford to be charitable towards it. Some of you readers might be surprised to know that such a fanatical article was written by a woman. However, feminists will be disappointed to hear that I submitted this paper strictly for the cause of white revolution, not for gender equality. I simply synthesize many of the ideas that I have gleaned from my own National Alliance comrades, as well as from such luminaries as Adolf Hitler, Leon DeGrale, Rev. Lo P. Oliver, George Lincoln Rockwell, and many others. It is my fervent hope that this article will further add to our great cause. And that was from an article from Liberty Bell from May 1994. Excellent, excellent. Very good. Is an interesting letter from that time in Liberty Bell from my friend, now deceased, Major Donald V. Clerken. Dear Border Watch, AICF, America is dead. Nothing can reverse the third worldization of North America short of a complete takeover by Aryan forces loyal to the Western culture and the white race. That is unlikely due to the fact that the white masses seem lobotomized as to the fate that awaits them upon becoming a minority. Long before that, Washington Camarilla will collapse of its own profligacy. Then at least the best of the whites will have an opportunity to establish a new republic for whites only, and only those whites who have demonstrated their willingness to preserve their race and culture, the founding stone of every nation. So let lush limp nuts smoke his Cuban stogies and wave his gold fringed flag of financial empire, the admiralty banner of the uniform commercial code that has replaced the Constitution and the Bill of Rights in courts. It's all coming to an end, but limp nuts won't be part of the new beginning. Clerken was quite a force, propaganda-wise, from Wisconsin, I believe. For many years, he was a real fighter until his death. There's another letter from a lady. Figures don't lie, do they? Holocaust, no emotional diatribes, just explain where the Holocaust 6 million came from. World Almanac and Book of Facts 1934 and 1945 show that between 1931 and 1945, world Jewry averaged 15.5 million based on the American Jewish Committee and the religious population figures. European Jewry under Hitler's control approximated 5,815,842, below the 6 million claim. Subtracting Jews who immigrated from Europe leaves 2,115,842 Jews in Europe during World War II. Why were Jews so hated by Germans? In March of 1933, the World Jewish Congress called on Jews worldwide to boycott German goods. In August the same year, Samuel Untermeyer of the World Jewish Economic Federation over the Columbia Broadcasting Station in New York City said the Jews of the world had declared war on Germany and would starve them, the Germans, to death. That declaration of war came 6 years before Germany initiated military action in 1939. The World Center of Contemporary Jewish Documentation in Paris shows that 1,482,292 Jews died from all causes in concentration camps. The Red Cross says 300,000 concentration camp deaths. Not all Jews. Of course, many died, yes, stacked like cordwood for Allied bombers near war's end, destroyed food and medical supplies. Jews and Germans alike died. Cremation and mass burial was necessary to prevent a Holocaust of plague. But through all this, worldwide Jewry figures remained constant from 1931 through 1945. So where did the 6 million figure come from? Well, it doesn't have to be logical. The Jews just dreamt it up. Very simple. They lie about it, and then every one of their people lie about it too, and then the dumb goyim, Christians and so forth, buy into the shit. It's enough to just to say a lot of Jews died. So what? I mean, that's a fact. A lot of Jews died. But like I always say, where are all the mounds and tons of ashes and bones? Where was all that stuff? You couldn't hide it. Even if you dumped it in the rivers, by modern technology, you can detect it. But they never used that argument because their whole story would fall flat on its face. And strangely, I can never get anybody to talk about it. Even a lot of our people, they don't want to talk about it. So I don't know what to say about that. Even if it was only 3 million Jews... figure how long it takes to cremate one body. 7 hours at the way the technology was at the time. And then how many ovens it would take to do that. And you got to remember, every so many hours a furnace cremating anything has to be recored and redone, and many would be faulty and they'd have to replace them. Now, do you think that the Germans could have taken that much of the energy out of their war effort to devote to killing 6 million Jews? It's nonsensical by simple math. It doesn't make it. Now, there were a lot of Jews that were involved being killed in the pits in Eastern Europe. Hell of a lot, probably more than Western Europe. So anyhow, ask them, where are all these 100-foot mounds and 200-foot mounds, and how long would it take to actually cremate that many bodies, even say a million, when it takes 7 hours for each body? These are the simple questions that can break their argument, but our Institute for Hysterical Review doesn't seem to be interested in that argument. I I apologize if they've used it and I didn't see it. But come on, let's use simple math to solve this problem. Or if it really upsets you, then just say, who cares? Next time you're accused, you killed 6 million Jews, who cares? Okay? That'll get, that shuts them up real fast. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day, Women's Day, in the bunker right here. Don't forget, if you're not using tmmetzger1@gmail.com, start using that instead of the Yahoo address. It makes things a lot simpler for me. If you want to blow another hole in that argument about the 6 million, go back into the archives of the New York Times or the New York Jewish Press, and they list the deaths of Jews in massive numbers of them, thousands and thousands of them, that are in the newspaper as dying, and what their real name was and what the name they were using is, that they just disappeared into the population. So anyhow, we're coming down to the wire, and I submit that it, you know, by the time the third world gets done with the Jews, they may really have a 6 million problem. And that's why they're so scared shitless about Iran, because Iran has the muscle to do it. Yeah, they do. And, of course, that's why the United States is always going after Iran, too. There's other reasons, but that's the main reason. Whatever the Jews get pissed off about, the non-Jew Christian people are going to go after, too. In other words, this country was screwed from the first day they let those Jews in. Even Washington, General Washington, was giving great speeches about how much he loved the Jews. So it's been here forever.
You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you forgot. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on. Always look on the bright side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
nothing will come from nothing, you know what I say? Oh, cheer up, you old bugger. Come on, give us a grin. There you are. See? In the film. Incidentally, this record's available in the foyer. Always look on the right. Someone's got to live as well, right? What do you think pays for this rubbish? Always look on the right. Money back, you know?